What amazed me about crypto economic networks is I think if they're properly designed, they're really forces for coordinating talent and capital on a global scale to go after a common mission. And so if you got that mission in mind, you've got a economic engine that can pull people and money together globally to go after it.
Today, I'm speaking with Brian Magierski. Brian is the founder of Cerebrum DAO, a collective effort to increase research into neurodegenerative diseases. We discuss what made Brian choose the DAO model, his thinking about passing on a researcher's reputation in DeSci projects, and non-traditional routes to biotech. Without further ado, I hope you enjoy our conversation. So, Brian, thanks so much for being here today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Perhaps to start us off, what high-level problem is your work trying to solve? How do your current projects fit into that effort?
Yeah, the broad problem space that we're working in is brain health. And I really, I got into it with a focus to try to accelerate what I call accelerate solutions and cures to neurodegeneration and other brain illnesses. It's just a frustration that we've been through so many decades of lots of funding and lots of research in this field and very little progress. I mean, we know a lot more than we ever have. And actually, the last 3 or 4 years have been eye-opening in the field of brain health in great ways that feed into what I'm doing right now. But for decades, we really didn't make a dent in things like Alzheimer's and dementia. Alzheimer's-based dementia is the only major disease category up until recently with no FDA-approved therapeutic. And today, I would still argue it has no effective FDA-approved therapeutic. And so we still don't have a solution for this or even a way to help significantly with this disease. And there's so much more around the brain. Unfortunately, for better or for worse, most of healthcare treats us from the neck down. The brain's rarely discussed, and we have epidemics in dementia on the horizon. And we have mental health epidemic, you know, across the globe right now as well. And I think a lot of this has to do with just the lack of understanding, lack of discussion, and lack of progress in this field. So we hope to change that.
Yeah. How did you first get exposed to, I guess, brain health as a field? Because I know you don't have necessarily a traditional like biopharma background or anything. How did you come to be interested in this?
Yeah, no, my background's software. I've started a few different software companies over the course of 20 plus years, mostly in enterprises helping automate business processes on Web 1, Web 2, mobile, that kind of thing. What got me into brain health is my youngest daughter, who's now 12. So I have three kids, all girls. My youngest one, 12, was born with Down syndrome. And so when she was born, my wife and I, you know, did everything we could to understand what Down syndrome was. And we were vaguely aware of it just through inclusion in society. Understanding everything about Down syndrome, the one thing that jumped out at us was that people with Down syndrome are 100% guaranteed to get Alzheimer's dementia. And the reason for that is twofold. One is the 21st chromosome is triplicated. There's something called the amyloid precursor protein that sits on that chromosome that's overexpressed. And so amyloid, a lot of people believe, and I do believe, is the precursor to Alzheimer's dementia, at least, and probably other dementias. She will build up those plaques faster than most people will. The second is recent research uncovered people with Down syndrome also kind of categorized as having a immune system disorder. They have hyperactive immune systems, and so their body's constantly fighting that. It leads to accelerated aging, but really inflammation. And so the combination of amyloid and inflammation is really, you know, two of the three things that we do believe causes Alzheimer's-based dementia. And so, you know, people with Down syndrome get symptoms, or they get pathology in their 30s, and they get symptoms in their 50s and 60s. And unfortunately, they're living longer lives, so they're living into their 60s, but unfortunately, they're all dying from Alzheimer's. And so that was in the back of my head. I'm not a neuroscientist. I'm not a biologist. I was like, well, I don't know what I can do about that, but I'm going to pay attention. And maybe I can do something about this at some point in my life. And, you know, fast forward 7 or 8 years, and this is 3-4 years ago, first autoimmune condition comes up that she has. And it was kind of that wake up call about the inflammation and while this is happening. So I'm like, all right, well, we got 25 years or so before any pathology happens. That's a long runway to do something about this. And you know what? I'm entrepreneurial. I love this blockchain stuff. People are coming together and forming capital all around the globe. New things are happening. I'm into software. There's big data, machine learning, nanotechnology, and other things, bringing miniaturization to devices and all sorts of other things. There's a lot of pathways to do something about brain health that don't necessarily involve molecules and biology. But if I'm down that pathway, I guarantee the researchers will come. So that's what got me into it. And 4 years ago, I kind of dropped everything that I was doing and said, all right, I'm going to focus all my time and attention and start working on projects in this field that I think could be commercially viable. I do believe in entrepreneurship and commercial enterprise as being a force for good. And so I didn't want to just do a foundation. I wanted something that was going to have exponentiating effects at creating economics behind this. Because, you know, for better or for worse, money does fund a lot of the things that we need to have done. And if you can create an economic engine around these things, a lot of other things build around it that can really accelerate things.
Yeah. What made you think that the DAO format is the most suited model then around which to organize this kind of work?
Yeah, so, you know, I'm working on two projects in brain health. One's an app that's more like a consumer-based health app that I think I can onboard, help it to millions of people to really help them with their brain health. And that's the data aggregation mechanism. The DAO, what got me to the DAO when I was thinking about, okay, if you just look at brain health, it's not an underfunded field. Alzheimer's research alone, the funding from the National Institutes of Health in the U.S. went from $400 million a year 10 years ago to almost $4 billion a year now. And so we've got $3 to $4 billion going into this field for many years now. So it's not that it's underfunded. The problem is, majority, 95% of the funding comes from NIH and, you know, the Alzheimer's Association. And so a lot of things that are viable science or strategies or pathways or, you know, other shots on goal that make sense are not getting funded. And so I'm like, well, in addition to the data side of this, what can I do on the funding side of this? And you look at, well, what are your mechanisms to go fund research and development to cure diseases? Typically, they are foundations, so non-for-profits. They come in two flavors, just a straight-up not-for-profit, and then what they call venture philanthropies, which are not-for-profits, but what they do is they invest for profit, and then they take the gains and recycle them. So you have like a increasing returns model. So you're not just fundraising through bake sales and walks, but you're also generating returns for your own nonprofit through your investments. And then the other is an impact fund, which is very much a for-profit enterprise where you say, hey, I'm going to raise a fund. It's going to be a 10-year fund. We're going to promise you X percent IRR, and we're raising this amount of money and we're going to deploy it. But then there are restrictions on all those models where the foundation, typically 501c3s, typically US-based. There are some Swiss and London-based foundations. So they're geographically constrained typically. And then they're passive, right? They become their own bureaucracy. So people can contribute, they can get the reports, they can go to the annual meetings, but fundamentally your contributions, your capital, and you're really not doing much else, with the exception of rare disease communities, which are interesting. Same goes for the venture philanthropies. It's just that they've got that increasing returns model. And then on the impact fund side, I didn't really care for it because I'm restricted by 10 years and then I got to commit to economic returns and then I got to commit to deploying that capital in 3 to 5 years. So it really prevents you from an expansive look at, hey, what else could we be doing here? You got to say no to a lot of things that actually would make sense. And so I had been in crypto for a fair amount of time. And what amazed me about crypto economic networks is I think if they're properly designed, they're really forces for coordinating talent and capital on a global scale to go after a common mission. And so if you got that mission in mind, you've got a economic engine that can pull people and money together globally to go after it. And so the DAO model really in its best form does that. I'm like, well, why not apply this to brain health? Everybody's got a brain around the world. We've got a, you know, dementia epidemic globally. You know, hundreds of millions of people are going to be faced with dementia in the next 10 to 20 years. People care about this, and it's their family members and their friends that are suffering from this, or that they want to prevent from this from happening to. And so we can create a movement, and we can coordinate them with incentives and capital. And if we're successful with this, it'll start small, but it should be larger than any foundation or impact fund. We've got broad flexibility to invest in what we think makes sense and what can actually solve the problem. It's participatory. The people that are coming in aren't just sending us a check and then waiting to see what we do with it. They can actually play a role in voting and participating, sourcing deals, and all sorts of other stuff. And, you know, we do have the potential, if you let this play out long enough, where our pool of capital should exceed, you know, that $4 billion National Institutes of Health budget. But it'll be broadly deployed, not deployed on what the bureaucracy of a few people actually think should be, you know, the funding priorities. So that's what led me there. And I was like, you know, we can start small, but I do think it can scale exponentially. And it has the benefit of the same thing that the venture philanthropy has, which is as you deploy the capital on research projects and corporations, the returns you generate come back in, and then you get to redeploy it, so you can exponentially grow your capital that way too. And so it just seemed to be a far more efficient way to engage a global audience, you know, have it be participatory and diverse. Like, you're going to bring a diverse body of people together that are going to find research that's interesting in places nobody would have thought to look. Or, you know, talent that has something to contribute in places where nobody would have thought to look. And I think that's the potential for DAOs. We're still very early, but, you know, I found my way to Molecule and Vita DAO and some of the other, the DeSci movement a couple of years ago. And it was very much aligned with what I was trying to do with brain health. And so I've been, you know, kind of wrapped into that a little bit ever since. And I think we're all trying to achieve the same goals, but, you know, focusing on different areas of human health.
Yeah. So the context in which I started to work on these episodes was my involvement with Vita DAO. And I'm curious whether there's any particular decisions in structuring this project that you've made that have differed from how Vita, for example, is structured.
You know, we're early right now. So we've done a private pre-sale, so we've got a little bit of operating capital. We made one investment, we're forming our community right now. So we've got an active community that's kind of growing right now. We're trying to learn from best practices from other DAOs, but being very, you know, focused on our mission and saying, does this make sense for us? We're still in the process of looking at our tokenomics. The one area that, my initial foray into this was a different DAO model than the traditional bio DAO. And then we've kind of pivoted our way toward where we are right now. My initial idea was to kind of replicate what, another DAO that had been reasonably successful called the Nouns DAO did. Which is they were auctioning off one NFT a day. So they built their community one auction at a time, one sale at a time, one vote at a time. They did it in the boom cycle and with a lot of crypto OGs that were very popular with pixelated art. So they've been very successful at building a treasury, and they had some really interesting and engaged. They had an engaged DAO, and their governance was very engaged and high percentage of participation. So I liked that about it. So we initially were going to go with a daily auction of NFTs perpetually. I've changed since then, but I'm still kind of thinking really hard about whether we launch with a fungible token or an NFT. And I had some concerns about a fungible token model. I see a lot of benefits to it in terms of it's a lot easier to use that token to pay contributors in a variety of different ways because you get smaller contributions. Where I think if you have an NFT, it can prevent people from being able to afford to buy their way into the DAO, and that it can prevent you from compensating. So there are some issues with that, but then on the same time, the fungible token side, this is an early stage in this market and they're very lightly traded and low liquidity pools. So relatively small transactions or movements in the token could really move the price around. And those are a lot of exogenous factors to the mission of the DAO that concern me, that I don't want to be distracted by early on, where I just want kind of true believers. I would love for DAOs to have, people contributing are just hodlers and they're locked in for a long period of time, for years until we actually get this to be a highly liquid and functioning DAO. So it almost feels like we need that, few year period where you kind of take almost it, and unfortunately, a lot of the fun of crypto is the speculation and all that too. So there's some hybrid I'm trying to think through there. I don't have an answer yet. We're looking at our token sales. We're hoping to get that done in the next few months. So we're really actively discussing token models right now, and that might be an area where we differ from them, but. Everything else we've kind of learned from, and it's been helpful. Like even the working group structures, consolidating down to three core working groups with squads, that was something that was an evolution for VitaDAO, and I think has been extremely helpful for us to kind of start there. And that's allowed us to kind of get our community up and running and functioning very well, and having a couple of leaders kind of coordinate. And so we're having a lot of success early on from learning from things like that with Vita. So, so we're trying to harvest best practices, which are working really well. And then, we're trying to tweak where we think we might be getting to try something different.
Makes sense, yeah. I'd be curious from your perspective, within the biotech industry, do you feel like you've encountered any misconceptions that the old guard, be it biopharma companies or VCs, might have of DeFi? In which configurations have you seen those work together in the past? And are there new contexts in which they might be able to work together in the future?
Well, I hope there's a lot of contexts for work together in the future. I think we've got our work cut out for us to prove the DAO model and to figure out how to interface with pharma and biotech. We've done very little so far. We've made one investment in a biotech company. It wasn't as hard as I thought it would be to convince them to allow a DAO to hold private equity in their company. So that was refreshing. The rest, I don't know. I think for the most part, it'll be challenging for some time for the pharmas and biotechs to understand how to interface with the DAO or to get comfortable even doing so. I know Pfizer is starting to lead the way a little bit with Vita, but I've also had some discussions with them, and it was quite a road to even get to that point where they can say yes. And I imagine a lot of other biotechs and pharmas are going to have to go through that. And you really need a strong internal champion that gets DeFi. And I think that's probably the challenge right now, is to find a few of these that might be more promising. And maybe they're younger biotechs, as opposed to mature pharmas like Pfizer, that we entice to kind of come in and say, hey, this could be a really good collaborative space for you, and here's why, and maybe give it a try. We've got one or two like that that we're in early discussions with in the brain health field, that are, you know, they're off the radar biotechs that are, you know, at clinical stage, which might be interesting.
Cool. And since DSI, we kind of mentioned that before too, is much more participatory than traditional academia when it comes to funding research projects. And both the giving end in terms of DAO participants and on the receiving end in terms of researchers, how do you think about ensuring an accurate pass on of a person's reputation and more broadly about maintaining scientific quality?
Yeah, it's an active topic right now for us as we're, you know, we're building our neuroscience crew, and when we're, you know, needing to figure out, you know, who's going to be on some of the evaluation teams as projects start coming in. We do have in our network, I'm building kind of an informal scientific advisory board that may not necessarily want their name yet associated with a DAO, but will be happy to give us their input on projects as they come in, which we can then share with our community and kind of triangulate against our working group participants to see, you know, how well that tracks with some of the experts that we have vetted in the field that have given us input on this. And so part of it is kind of a verification exercise where we say, okay, well, let's let the DAO working group do their work, but let's also run this by some vetted scientists that may not necessarily want their name associated with it yet, and see, you know, see how well our group does against that. You know, that's one mechanism. Another is, you know, we'll create some, we're looking at creating some scoring and tracking system that comes in. So as we kind of go through and deals come in, you know, people that are sourcing them, people that are evaluating them, we will track everybody's input into the process. And then based on how the projects actually work, right? Did they get funded? Did they achieve their milestones? Did they get a subsequent funding or an IP token event that kind of took the project forward? People will develop a rating system based on that, and almost kind of that is the ideal way, is to just let it bubble up as a meritocracy and say, look, over time, these are the people that have been making good calls, and these are the people not so much. And then we can kind of put more weight into the people that have actually been successful at saying yes and no properly to things based on how they played out. But that'll take some time to build out. But we do, I think the more we can make it measurable and a meritocracy as opposed to kind of opinion, you know, the better. And that's going to be the benefit of the DAO, because then you got an engine and you got a group of people that, if you fast forward several years, you know, you've got a very well vetted audience, and it's going to be pretty hard to argue with that. History, you know, scope itself. They've been writing and they're part of the network. So, you know, the DAOs are all about network effects, and the more we can build network effects around the network of people working on it, and the more it is data-based and meritocracy, the better I think we'll be, you know, in 4 or 5 years. And that will be, you know, a moat around a DAO that other people just can't create, because you're going to go through like a recruiting process, and it's going to be down to, you know, less measurable metrics of reputation, right? So I think that's some of the potential power. It's just, you know, network, when you're talking about network economies and network organizations and network anything, it's always, you know, you got the curve, right? It takes a while to build, but then, you know, then it takes off exponentially. And so, you know, networks just take, you know, inherently take a while to build, but their defensibility becomes impermeable over time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Given, I suppose, the kind of expertise that one has to have if one is funding, you know, scientific research rather than, you know, say like a cultural project or such, which is maybe like not as dependent on like a particular institution or a particular kind of like set of kind of background knowledge or even equipment. How do you think about the incentives that academics might have to collaborate with DSAI projects, especially like specialized ones like what you're working on right now?
Academics to collaborate?
Yeah.
I think the DAO actually creates it creates a unique opportunity for academics that hasn't existed really yet. And that is, it's almost like they get, I think the analogy that I've heard, and I forget who's made this before, is you can almost, like, if you look at the last 20 years and, you know, what we've done with software startups and young entrepreneurs, and who've kind of, you know, built amazing networks and companies, you know, from scratch with, from, you know, next to nothing, and are celebrated as rock stars in society. We have the same potential to do with academics, really to unlock them from, you know, the publisher perish model and from the lab, and give them the opportunity to pursue their research, you know, based on its merits, and then participate in the economic potential that can come from that, through the tokens themselves, and through whatever, you know, either license or a subsequent company or network company that comes out of that. So I think we have, you know, massive potential to unlock entrepreneurial energy in a unique and different way than software entrepreneurial energy, through a DAO funding model that kind of strips away, you know, what seems to me to be a lot of legacy barriers that are artificial to career achievement. And a lot of this is, you know, publishing, you know, and, you know, the need to do that to build your reputation, the time that that takes. You know, if somebody like Mark Zuckerberg, or, you know, name your famous 20-year-old entrepreneur, can build something as impactful as you know, Facebook, at that age with their brain power, who's to argue that a postdoc, you know, or, you know, a young professor who maybe hasn't had the legacy of publishing yet doesn't have something that merits research, funding, and potential commercialization, and to benefit from that. We've seen this already. You know, I think one of the examples I can give you, and it happens, but it's very rare and it's hard for it to happen. I think the DAOs unlock it. So we had, and this is in the brain field, so the field of ALS research, you know, was stuck in a similar situation. Not many effective therapeutics were out there for it. And so two young undergraduate students at Brown University came up with the idea to pursue combination therapies of FDA-approved therapeutics and natural products. So in various combinations to address the condition of ALS. And they managed to get themselves funded as a biotech. And in 8 years, they went from funding to being publicly traded and a FDA-approved therapeutic that's probably the most effective one in the market right now. How many more of those people are out there that, you know, weren't going to be in a position where they could navigate their way to find everything that they needed, from the capital to the scientific advisors and the mentors to actually allow that to happen? But it just goes to show you that it's possible. And there are a lot more people like that sitting out there that DAOs can unlock that potential in a much easier and more fluid way, and actually have the network that can support them out of the box. So I think there's tremendous potential out there, and that's really what we're going to witness is these DAOs are going to be just unbundling a lot of energy that I think is locked up in research institutions right now that could have tremendous commercial potential and you know, obviously as a result of that human potential.
What's the main disagreement between you and the other core people on your project right now, if you could speak to any?
Disagreements? You know, we really haven't had any yet. I think that the main area that we're trying, that we're debating right now, and we don't have resolution, is to lock down on our top funding priorities. The brain health field, we've got, like, there's just so much that we can go do and fund in brain health, and we can go down. You can spend, like, everybody in the DAO all day and all night looking at all different fields. And I think we've got to put a few stakes in the ground and say, you know, we're going to be proactive and intentional about, you know, a few spaces, a few approaches to brain health that we think are going to be the most impactful that are probably being ignored today. And we're going to go after all the top scientists in each of these spaces and try to bring them into the DAO and convince them that they should be taking funding for their projects. After that, I think we can open up, you know, for a lot more, you know, to be a lot more flexible and open-minded about different strategies. But it kind of goes against my initial thing. It's like, well, you know, the you've got two funding sources and they're only focused on a couple strategies. Well, we're going to only be focused on a couple strategies, but I think we've got to get the wheels in motion. So this is like a little debate that we're having right now. We'll get it locked down. I don't think there's a tremendous amount of disagreement about the need to do that. You know, I think the areas of debate are more around, was it three of them? Was it five of them? And which ones are in and which ones are out? So that's kind of what most of us being debated right now.
Okay, cool. I suppose, lastly, I just want to give you the opportunity, if there's any questions that I haven't asked today or any topics that you'd really like to address, do any come to mind?
No, mostly just, you know, we're in the early stages right now. So we're community building. We're looking for active participants. So, you know, it's more just a recruiting call out. If you're interested in brain health broadly, you know, we're active in the community building. So this is the best time to come in. And, you know, if you want to have a role in actually defining the direction of a DAO, we are early enough where, you know, you're going to be able to really have a big impact on that, whether it's in neuroscience and saying which strategies should we fund, or sourcing this deal flow, or setting up even our deal flow process. These are all things that we're in the process of doing right now. If you're not, you know, if you're not a neuroscientist or a biologist or a scientist of any kind, you know, we're marketing, we're podcasting, or social media engagement, we're, you know, we're publishing content, we're building and managing a community and driving engagement. So there's a lot of you know, skill sets that are needed well beyond neuroscience. You know, the only thing that we all share is a passion and interest in brain health broadly. And then, you know, even tokenomics and token design, that these are all things that are active with us. So we're very much in that community recruitment and empowerment, giving people real responsibility. And there's a real chance to earn rewards and incentives early on in meaningful ways at this stage. So this is a great stage to do it. We've got resources, so we're not starting with nothing. We're starting with, you know, some good funding and some great backers, and a pathway to raise more through a public sale. So, you know, this is a really exciting time to kind of get in and lead us, you know, to that public sale and to our first few investments beyond, you know, the one biotech that we've been in so far. So that's the only thing I would hit. You know, everything else, just pay attention to brain health. Even if you're just, you know, want to be a fly on the wall and want to learn about brain health, this is a great place to come. We got a lot of people that are just dumping articles and education materials into our Discord, and It's a great place if you just want to learn what's going on, what's the latest and greatest, what are the things I need to know that I don't know. You can come in and just start that way by learning and then figure out what you might contribute.
Sweet. We'll link to the project and the research as well.
Definitely.
And best of luck in the next few months.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Thank you so much for taking the time to speak today.
Absolutely. Appreciate it.